Welcome to the Shortwave Report. I'm your host and producer, Dan Roberts. This Shortwave Report is a 30-minute review of news and opinion heard on the shortwave radio and the internet in Northern California. Listening to international broadcast at home is quite easy. You just need a shortwave radio with a schedule of English language broadcast, or a computer or smartphone with an internet connection. To help you with this, I'll announce times, frequencies, and website addresses at the conclusion of each series of stories. At the website for this show, that's www.outfarpress.com, you can listen to the past 5 shortwave reports, find advice for listening to shortwave at home, and find some internet links for global news sources. Please check it out and tell a friend. In today's edition, you'll hear reports from Sputnik Radio, Germany's Radio Deutsche Welle, and NHK Japan. We will begin with Sputnik Radio. On his program called Going Underground, Afshin Ratansi spoke with journalist and filmmaker John Pilger. John discusses why Palestine is still an issue in 2021 and the Israeli aerial bombardment of Gaza, which has claimed hundreds of lives, including 63 children, and displaced over 50,000. He talks about the European Union, the United States, and the UK role in the Israeli bombardment, Palestine's legal right to resist, and Hamas as a part of resistance provoked by Israeli occupation. He addresses the media boycott of Gaza and why the mainstream media's both sides assertions are false. Sputnik Radio.
Palestine is still the issue. The title of a sequel 2002 film by legendary journalist and filmmaker John Pilger is a sentiment seemingly unheeded by so-called mainstream media, even when the offices of NATO nation journalists are bombed by the UK-US EU-armed Israeli military. Joining me from Sydney is John Pilger. You said Palestine is the issue in the last century and in this century. How does it link everything from war and peace, atrocities, imperialism, information to neoliberalism?
Well, Palestine is the center of a great imperial act. I've made 2 films called Palestine is Still the Issue, 28 years apart. I may make another one. It'll be called Palestine is Still the Issue, because Palestine, unless we understand the atrocity being imposed on Palestine and the right of people to defend themselves, the right of people to resist against an external outside force, a force that becomes more extreme by the moment, and I'm talking about Israel, then we'll never understand how the world works. There's been a whole attempt to make Hamas the central issue of the reporting, and that's nonsense, as if Hamas is a peculiar demon. In fact, Hamas and its military wing are part of a resistance that was provoked by the Israelis. The real demon in this is Israel, but it's not simply Israel. I mean, this is as much a British and American war against Palestine as it is an Israeli one. You know, just a few years ago, the chief of the defense staff in Britain, Sir Nick Carter, visited Israel, and between himself and senior Israeli strategists, they drew up basically a secret plan, a partnership, a military partnership between Israel and Britain. In fact, it goes much deeper than that. It's an integration of the two military forces, where you have Israelis being trained in ordnance design in Britain. Ordnance design is bombs. And British soldiers being trained with units, the IDF describes it as Palestinian tested. The integration of Britain, and especially the United States, which gives Israel $10 million a day, is, in one sense, it's a British-European-American war against the people of Palestine, who are doing one thing, exercising their moral and legal right to resist a brutal occupation. The Palestinians have crude rockets, and when they're accused of indiscriminate shelling, yes, the rockets are crude. But on the other hand, Israel is doing discriminate targeting, deliberately attacking, as it's always done, civilian targets. And we had the spectacle the other day of a high-rise building in which the media, almost all Palestinian, certainly non-Western media, being blown up by the Israelis with the nonsensical story that it was harboring Hamas. It wasn't. And all those journalists there are witnesses to that. It's like the BBC reporter, Jeremy Bowen, who talks about a war between Israel and Hamas. Bowen knows that's wrong. It's an attack on an occupied people by the occupier, Israel, backed by great powers. The provocation, the attack on Palestinians and the attack on the holiest mosque in Islam was entirely unprovoked. And Hamas warned the Israelis, stop these attacks on our people in Jerusalem. Stop them now or we will resist. And so they resisted, as every people has a right to do. The Western media, you know, where are they in Gaza? Yes, there are a lot of Palestinian journalists risking their lives and Muslim journalists and Arabic-speaking journalists. But where are all the high-paid Western journalists? It looks to me like a boycott of Gaza.
You think there was a time when journalists were tried harder to get into Gaza? Obviously, the journalists are saying, they don't explicitly say, but it's Israel that actually prevents them and doesn't give them the passes. And I should say, Israel obviously says there were rocks at Al-Aqsa Mosque, and Israel says they give warnings, although that's disputed by some of the children who've seen their parents being killed.
Well, we know that. Israel is a lie machine, and has been proven to be that. But I think we do have to understand the responsibility in Britain. It had the responsibility of not only the present government, but the Labour Party is part of that. I mean, Starmer's Labour Party, which allowed pro-Israel groups to direct the policies of the Labour Party that, in effect, support this attack. When you have the shadow foreign secretary saying that to criticise Israeli atrocities is anti-Semitic, then we're in Lewis Carroll world, really.
The BBC had a piece after some of the atrocities in the past week saying, but why is it all these protesters? We saw that some of the largest protests in the world here in London, but I know they've been all around the world. Why is it they don't protest about the Syrian government or against the, according to Western sources, genocide committed by China? Why are these protesters about Palestine at all?
Why don't they protest against anything? Why don't they protest to the Australian government about the genocide against the indigenous people? Why don't they protest to the US government about the dozens of countries that is overthrown and about the great numbers of people whose deaths it has caused and whose dispossession it has caused? It's a banal argument. People are protesting about an atrocity that is going on before our eyes. And we're allowed to see that atrocity because of some of the bravest journalists, and I know some of these people, photographers, cameramen, people whose building we saw blown up. The high-paid BBC people and others are just not there. Now, yes, it may be very difficult. The Israelis, whose domain they seem to cover very well, won't let them in. Why don't they get in, regardless? Biden and Obama, in 2014, during the last Israeli killing fest on Palestine, they were killing something like an average of 11 children a day, and yet Obama and Biden arranged the resupply of precision weapons to Israel. Biden is now the president. I don't see any difference. The only difference is the resistance. That's what's different in this attack. There is a real resistance. And that should be matched by people going beyond their governments, beyond their parliaments, and going into the streets. That's the only way. Whether or not that succeeds, I don't know. But there is no other way.
Has Israel, I know they've been accused of killing journalists in the past, borrowed from the NATO playbook when it famously blew up Belgrade TV in Yugoslavia in this destruction of the big tower in Gaza housing media organizations?
It's a lot more dangerous now than when I was a war correspondent, particularly in Southeast Asia, because now your side, that is the side representing the people whose newspaper or broadcasting organization sent you, are aiming for you. You're a target. But at the very least, these Palestinian cameramen and photographers and journalists, they are targets. But all journalists now are targets. The US in particular doesn't give a damn whether you're a journalist or whether you have a lanyard hanging around your neck that says journalist. You'll get shot. The Israelis, of course, not only don't give a damn, they don't even consider it. You'll get shot, period.
John Pilger, thank you.
That excerpted interview is by Afshin Ratansi from his program called Going Underground, heard on Sputnik Radio, the current name for the Voice of Russia, available online at rt.com. Next, Germany's Radio Deutsche Welle. Weather events in Siberia, intense flooding in the Amazon forest, and the most powerful cyclone in India for decades point to the effects of climate change. It is true here in California as well. John Kerry is the U.S. climate envoy, and he speaks about what measures the U.S. would like to see globally to combat climate change. He explains that what he said recently about environmental technologies we need to implement to prevent a full-scale catastrophe. They have been invented, but 42 of the 46 are not yet ready to be brought to scale. Then a series of brief updates on the global COVID and vaccine situation. U.S. Secretary of State Blinken spoke with Russian Foreign Minister Lavrov. Thousands of French police took to the streets to protest a recent officer who was murdered on duty. Germany's Radio Deutsche Welle.
Fresh wildfires have broken out in western Siberia in Russia, forcing hundreds of people to evacuate their homes. Last year, Siberia experienced a devastating fire season, and this year, the blazes have started even earlier. Scientists say climate change could be to blame.
Heavy rains in Brazil's Amazon rainforest have caused rivers to rise to nearly record levels there. Authorities say more than 400,000 people have been affected by the flooding, with many forced to leave their homes. Environmental researchers say climate change is behind the latest extreme weather.
And the Indian Navy is searching for dozens of people still missing from a barge that sank off Mumbai on Tuesday during a cyclone. It's being called the most powerful storm to hit the region in decades. Thousands of homes in the western state of Gujarat were damaged.
Well, climate change is being blamed for a huge cyclone that hit India's west coast this week, killing at least 27 people, many more are still missing. Experts say the cyclone is part of a growing number of severe storms to develop in the Arabian Sea as climate change warms its waters. Now, that warming tendency is increasing the risks of disasters in other parts of the world as well. Many nations are trying to enact reforms to curb or limit the damage. Well, earlier, DW News spoke with U.S. climate envoy John Kerry about the measures that his government would like to see taken to combat climate change.
Envoy Kerry, the cyclone we're seeing in India is really hitting home the message that more of those storms in the future are a global threat. At the same time, the U.S. is continuing fracking. So how do you want to convince poorer countries to do their part in the climate effort?
Well, it's critical that the 20 biggest emitters in the world, of which we are one, and the EU counts as a whole as one, and India and China and others, we have to step up. All of us have to lead here by example. And that means we need to be achieving significant reduction goals, not just by 2050, but over the next 10 years. If we, 20 nations that are the largest economies of the world, don't mitigate, meaning reduce our emissions during 2020 to 2030, then we would be responsible for denying the rest of the world the ability to hold the temperature well below 2 degrees or at 1.5.
Here in Germany, there are elections in September, and the polling shows that for the first time there could be a green-led government. How would you feel about a green government at the helm of Europe's largest economy ahead of that crucial summit in November in Glasgow?
Well, it's up to the people of Germany to decide. You know, it's not up to me and how I feel or President Biden feels about it. We certainly support the policy of addressing climate crisis. And obviously the Greens are very seized by and engaged in that particular issue. But this is for the campaign ahead, not for us. And unlike Russia, we're not going to involve ourselves in other people's elections.
Now, you yourself have cited 9 years left to go to avoid no longer being able to meet the 1.5 degree aim. At the same time, you want to rely on largely uninvented technology. Are you simply being optimistic?
The idea is we have a very short period of time, and we have to make those decisions. Now, what I said about invention with respect to it, the IEA, the International Energy Agency, has said that 42 of 46 critical technologies are not yet capable of being brought to scale and put into the marketplace. That's what I was saying. It's not that we haven't invented some of these things. It is that they're not at a scale where they are commercially viable yet. And what we need to do is get green hydrogen or battery storage or storage of some kind and other things able to be brought to the marketplace at scale.
Special Envoy for Climate, John Kerry, thank you very much for talking to Dr.
Thank you very much.
UNICEF is urging wealthy nations to share excess vaccine doses with countries in need. The UN agency says the emergency measure would help make up for a shortfall due to disruptions to vaccine exports from India. And coronavirus restrictions are being eased across much of the UK today, despite concerns over a fast-spreading variant of the disease. Singapore has warned new variants are affecting more children. Most schools there are being closed this week as authorities make plans to vaccinate kids. And South Africa is rolling out vaccines to people over 60. It aims to inoculate 5 million older citizens by the end of June.
The number of new infections registered in India continues to fall, but the daily death toll has reached a new record high. More than 4,300 fatalities were reported on Monday. Schools have closed for the first time across Taiwan as the government tries to control the island's worst coronavirus outbreak since the beginning of the pandemic. And Singapore has become the first country in Asia to approve the use of the BioNTech Pfizer vaccine on children between the ages of 12 and 15.
And Taiwan has raised its COVID-19 alert level for the whole island in response to a rising caseload. Malaysia recorded a new daily record for infections, reporting more than 6,000 new cases.
U.S. Secretary of State Antony Blinken has held his first meeting with Russian Foreign Minister Sergei Lavrov in Iceland. They said their countries can find ways to work together despite their differences. Lavrov called the talks constructive and said preparations would begin for a possible meeting between the two countries' leaders. Thousands of French police officers have protested outside Parliament in Paris. They're demanding better protection and punishment for attacks against them. It comes 2 weeks after an officer was shot dead while on duty in the southern city of Avignon.
Those reports were from Germany's Radio Deutsche Welle, which may be heard at a combined audio-video website, dw.com. If you have access to internet, I recommend looking at the English language France 24 channel on YouTube. It covers world events with a mostly neutral, very intelligent perspective. If you have questions or comments about the shortwave report or could make a donation for production cost of this listener-funded program, I may be reached through the website and PayPal or by writing to Dan Roberts at P.O. Box 1162, Willits, California, 95490. Please, if you find this program beneficial, help support this freely distributed weekly radio show. We will conclude with NHK World Radio Japan. The U.S. is deepening ties with coast guards in the Indo-Pacific region to counter China or other Asian nations that might disrupt maritime order. Tensions between the U.S. and China continue to heat up, with Congresswoman Pelosi urging a boycott of the upcoming Winter Olympics in Beijing. U.S. lawmakers have passed a bill to fight anti-Asian hate crimes, which have spiked recently. An update on the fighting in Myanmar, where armed civilians and ethnic forces are battling with the military junta. The U.S. has waived sanctions it imposed on a German company that's working on the Nord Stream gas pipeline from Russia. NHK Japan.
Turning to the U.S. movements in the Indo-Pacific region, President Biden says the country is deepening ties with coast guards in a move to counter China or any nation that would disrupt maritime order.
Increasingly, we're seeing those rules challenged, both by the rapid advance of technology and the disruptive actions of nations like China and Russia.
Biden spoke on the issue in a Wednesday commencement speech at the U.S. Coast Guard Academy. He called the Coast Guard an increasingly central element in efforts to protect lives and safeguard sovereignty throughout the Indo-Pacific region. The U.S. Coast Guard has already reached an agreement to partner with Taiwan. Biden said the U.S. Coast Guard sent a patrol ship to waters near the Galapagos Islands last year to deter a fleet of Chinese fishing boats. It also deployed a new type of vessel in Guam and sent patrol vessels to the Western Pacific. Biden says other nations are making requests.
Tensions between the U.S. and China continue to heat up. House of Representatives Speaker Nancy Pelosi is urging world leaders to boycott the 2022 Beijing Winter Games due to the human rights situation in China.
For heads of state to go to China in light of a genocide that is ongoing while you're sitting there in your seats, it really begs the question, what moral authority do you have to speak again about human rights any place in the world?
The California Democrat was speaking at a video congressional hearing on Tuesday. She criticized Beijing's human rights record in the Xinjiang Uyghur Autonomous Region and elsewhere. China's foreign ministry spokesperson said Pelosi's remarks are full of lies and represent a typical American farce that's bound to fail.
The call for a boycott is based on ideology and political bias and uses human rights as an excuse to demean China. We express deep dissatisfaction and resolute opposition.
Zhao said politicizing sports goes against the spirit of the Olympic Charter and harms the interests of athletes around the world. U.S. lawmakers have passed a bill to fight anti-Asian hate crimes, which have spiked during the pandemic. The House of Representatives overwhelmingly voted in favor of the bill on Tuesday, paving the way for President Biden to sign it into law. It comes after several high-profile cases of anti-Asian violence and discrimination. This Japanese-American senator says the bill's passage makes an important statement.
Asians are seen as the other. We are the perpetual foreigners. Even if some of us have been here for generations, we are still seen as the other.
Advocates say many hate crimes go unreported. The bill will allow law enforcement agencies to use grants to improve investigating tools and raise public awareness. The Justice Department will create a new post dedicated to reviewing hate crimes. Casualties are mounting in Myanmar as the military continues its violent crackdown on civilian dissent. A local human rights group says 802 civilians have been killed since the coup on February 1st. Fighting between the military and armed civilians has intensified in the northwestern town of Minh Dat. The human rights group says at least seven people, including a 16-year-old boy, have been shot and killed in recent days while defending the town. Local media report the junta sent in reinforcements by helicopter while civilians were using old-fashioned weapons such as hunting rifles. The United Nations has announced the total number of displaced people in the country surpassed 50,000 since the coup on February 1st. Fighting between the military and armed civilians has intensified in the town of Mindat in northwestern Chin State, where the military declared martial law last week. A local humanitarian organization says at least 7,500 people fled the town as the junta forces advanced. They're reportedly in dire need of food and other necessities. The UN Office for the Coordination of Humanitarian Affairs said on Tuesday, access to the displaced people is limited due to the security situation. It says an estimated 42,000 are internally displaced in the country's southeast as armed clashes between ethnic Karen forces and the junta continue unabated. Now, the Japanese government says Myanmar's embassy in Tokyo has informed it the passports of two of its diplomats have been revoked. Japan's chief cabinet secretary told reporters on Thursday the foreign ministry received an official diplomatic document to that effect from the embassy. He said Japan is considering how to deal with the matter given the current situation in Myanmar. Foreign ministry officials say the two diplomats used social media to protest the coup. The United States has waived sanctions on a company behind a controversial project to build a Russian natural gas pipeline to Germany. The Biden administration is still imposing sanctions on Russian companies and ships working on the pipeline. Secretary of State Antony Blinken said in a statement he had determined it's in the national interest of the U.S. to waive the application of sanctions on Nord Stream 2 AG, its CEO Matthias Warnig, and its corporate officers. Nord Stream 2 is owned by the Russian state company Gazprom with investment from several European companies. The administration of former President Donald Trump opposed the project, warning it would heighten European dependence on Russia and increase Russian influence. Biden is also against the $11 billion project, which is already nearly complete. Critics in the U.S. of the pipeline had hoped to stop it with sanctions, but Biden is reportedly reluctant to damage the relationship with Berlin. Germany has strongly opposed any U.S. sanctions, and the country's foreign minister praised the decision to waive as a constructive step. Blinken said Wednesday's actions demonstrate the administration's commitment to energy security in Europe, consistent with the president's pledge to rebuild relationships with allies and partners in Europe. He added the administration will continue to oppose the completion of this project, and the U.S. opposition to the pipeline is unwavering.
Those reports were from NHK Radio Japan. They are now heard from 9:30 to 10 p.m. at 7245 and 7355 or on the web at www.3.nhk.or.jp. All the times I announce are for Pacific Daylight Saving Time, so please adjust them to your time zone. One of my goals in producing this show is to encourage people like you to listen to international broadcasts, get a global perspective. Every Thursday evening, I post a new shortwave report at the website for the show. That's outfarpress.com. At my website, you can listen to past shows. Please consider making a safe donation online through PayPal. There's a link at the website along with a podcast link, and get advice for listening at home. The Shortwave Report, which is now in its 25th year of production, remains free to rebroadcast upon notification. The Shortwave Report is produced and distributed off the electrical grid in Northern California using solar panels. I'm your host and producer, Dan Roberts. Thanks for listening.